The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, this is Ben Wright Human, author of the webcomics Cost Pain and the Letters of the Devil, and you are listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 345. I hope all is well with you, and I want to thank you very much for checking out this installment of the PVD Cast. Now, real quickly, just want to give you an update on the Columbus Podcast Awards. As you know, if you have been listening to this podcast for quite a while over the last few months in the summer, you know that I have been hyping up the fact that not only is the PVD Cast nominated in the entertainment division, but also my other podcast project, Matt Talk, is nominated in the TV and film division. And I just found out that on September 10th at the Lincoln Theater here in Columbus, Ohio, the awards ceremony is going to happen. And who knows? Maybe I will walk home with some hardware. I really would like to. It really kind of means something special to me. So fingers crossed. Voting is done, by the way, so this is not going to be a plug for me to say go vote because it's locked. It's done. But I'm looking forward to September 10th and seeing what happens at the Lincoln Theater. All right, let's talk about my guest. He is an independent comic book creator from Delaware, Ohio, right up the road. I'm talking about, of course, Mr. Sean Forney. Sean was last on the PVD Cast, I want to say about a year ago, a little more than a year ago, when yours truly visited the Torg Gaming Expo. That would be episode number 305, where I talked a little bit to Sean as well as the other comic book creators that were there. But Sean's back on to talk about Scarlet Huntress, which of course is his main title that he works on. He's got a bunch of other little side projects, too. We'll actually touch on those in the conversation. But Scarlet Huntress is coming up here on the final issue to wrap up the current storyline. Scarlet Huntress Reckoning is what Sean is working on, and he had a very successful Kickstarter for the project. And so we're going to talk about the project. We're going to talk a little bit about the Kickstarter, even though it's over and done with. We're also going to talk about some of his other projects, some of his inspiration. I even throw a little curveball at Sean and asked him two very interesting questions at the end of our conversation. So you don't want to miss it. But before we get to that conversation, I need to thank once again my great sponsor, World's Greatest Comics. I say it all the time. I say it episode after episode that if you need a comic book store to call your own, then you look no further than World's Greatest Comics. They got tons of single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They've got comic book supplies. They have a great pool system, a friendly staff, a clean store, a knowledgeable staff too, no less. Lots of great stuff at World's Greatest Comics, so you need to go check it out. You can find them over at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But you can also check them out online. WGComics.com is their website. And, of course, they're also on Facebook. Just search for at WG Comics. And I know I haven't said it in a while, so I'm going to just remind you that if you interact with anybody from World's Greatest Comics, whether over the internet or if you stop by the store, please let them know that you heard about World's Greatest Comics from me here on the PVD Cast. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Sean Forney. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening I'm sitting down with Sean Forney. He is, of course, the man behind Scarlet Huntress And Sean, how are you doing this evening?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Doing okay. Can't complain. You know, it's sunny here in Westerville and also raining at the exact same time. I don't even know how that's meteorologically possible, but it's doing it right now.
Excellent. It's always fun when you get those weird meteorological events that you can't explain, and you just sit there and watch it. And
I guess it's that old adage that if you don't like the weather in Ohio, just wait 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. All right, well, let's talk a little bit, because it's been a while since you've been on. I think episode 305 was the last time that we talked, which was, I think, a year or so ago. That was the Torg Gaming Expo, where you were set up along with many other great independent artists and creators. So let's recap for maybe the new listeners. Can you give a quick summary of Scarlet Huntress?
Sure. Scarlet Huntress is a modern-day descendant of Little Red Riding Hood, and she hunts werewolves and other cryptid creatures, and she's trying to seek revenge on who murdered her mother. And so it's this revenge tale slash, you know, coming into her own as like a hero, and just all the journey she goes into, you know, that whole trip of finding out everything to where we end up currently.
You've been working on this comic for quite a while, correct?
Yes. We developed the character like late 2003, and her first appearance was published in 2004. So yeah, ever since then, somewhere in the span of like 2 to 5 years, we've been trying to, you know, get an issue out there. It's one of those things where it's always kind of been our, I hate to use a phrase like back burner projects, but unfortunately it's kind of what it is. My wife works full time. I do art and illustration stuff full time. So it's like, we always got to try to cram it in those spare moments in between where we don't have, you know, 10,000 other things going on. So right. It's a, you know, makes for a long journey of getting the story out there.
Well, the most recent edition of Scarlet Huntress, which is called Reckoning, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
It just had a very successful Kickstarter. So the Kickstarter is over and you are fully funded.
Yes. We ended, it was August 9th. So we did this marathon of at the beginning of June. It was like literally like the last couple of days of May. We started doing a convention every other weekend from June through August. And so that marathon of conventions is over, the marathon of running, the Kickstarter's over. We set them up to kind of coincide so we could use the conventions as, you know, an extra bit of promotion and advertising of handing out postcards, telling people to go check out the Kickstarter and that kind of thing. So the mad dash is done. The book is funded. I'm working on the book and working on getting all the other goodies to go with it.
I was going to ask, that was my next question, is what's kind of the status of the project right now? Because you're fully funded and now, you know, you're getting into the actual heart of the matter, so to speak.
Yes, yes. Whereas I would have loved to have been, you know, had more of the book completed before we launched Kickstarter. It just wasn't feasible, like I said, with trying to do this stuff full time and be able to afford to do what we want to do with this book. It makes it difficult for me to, you know, put a lot of time and effort into making sure it's done before we launch. So thankfully, because this thing was so successful, it does afford us the opportunity to bring on some creative help in the way of bringing in a letterer, hopefully, and probably a couple of inkers to help me out keeping up with the schedule so that we can still hit our goal of getting this thing out by the end of the year.
Do you have like a sense of pride that you got successfully funded in a relatively short amount of time, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yes, I absolutely. I was stunned. My wife and I, because she's the co-creator, she writes it and everything. We went live when we launched the Kickstarter. We went live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, all that mess, and we had a handful of, you know, friends, fans, what have you, that joined us while we were streaming. And the Kickstarter started funding, and it just started racking up really quick, and it was. We were about 25 minutes in and I was like, oh, wow, we're funded. And it just kind of blew our minds that it was that quick. And then, you know, everything from there just kind of you know, the snowball started rolling and just kept growing. And I'm still kind of in a bit of shock of how well we ended up, because it's kind of been one of those goals where it's like, OK, I would love to get to this point. I don't know if we can do it. I don't know if we're there yet. And I don't know if we've done enough to, you know, get the word out and be able to do this. And all of a sudden, the last 3-4 days of this thing running, we exceeded every expectation and, you know, hope and dream that we had for it.
You know, you mentioned the word fans. And so just going to deviate a little bit from our conversation. What's it like to have, you know, people come up and talk and talk to you about your creations and be a fan of your creations? What is it? How does that make you feel?
It's kind of that feeling of accomplishment and feeling of, you know, just being excited, happy, and whatever that, you know, there's various people that are coming up and they enjoy the work that I'm doing. They enjoy the work that we're doing with creating Scarlet and everything we've done with the story. It's just a big ball of emotions all rolled into one, where it's like, wow, you know, seeing something we created has, you know, struck a chord with somebody and they want to continue reading the story, or they, you know, their first time diving into reading the story. And that goes with any kind of artwork I create. But with this one being more so, we've poured a lot more than me just sitting down at the table and working on a drawing. This one's got a lot of thought behind it as far as us putting together the story and putting together what's on each page and, you know, all these things to see folks that are, you know, enjoying it or, you know, coming in first time to read it, look at it, what have you. It just, you know, again, it's just a big ball of emotions of, you know, happiness, excitement, you know, accomplishment, and a little like trepidation of like, oh man, I hope everybody's going to enjoy what we're doing. So yeah, all these things just kind of roll in there, and it's just, you know, it all kind of sparks at the same time. And again, it, like going back with like the Kickstarter thing to see how well it did, is like all those things again, like just hit all at once.
A couple of episodes ago, I sat down and chatted with Lee and Nate Exifer. And one of the things that we talked about was working with a sibling. How is it working with your wife? You two may have disagreements on what she has written or what you have sketched. So how do you kind of hammer those out when you have those disagreements?
We usually do like a lot of back and forth. Well, on this one, especially. So like usually I'll just kind of like jot down some notes and be like, okay, I think we need to have this in the story. But this one, I knew it was like, we decided we wanted to wrap the story arc we've been working on. And it's like, okay, we need to shoot for doing a much bigger book. We need to make sure we get everything in the story so it's not too rushed. You know, just trying to take into account all the things that I think, you know, being a fan of comics and movies and stuff myself, you know, and having lots of friends and conversations where we talk about all these things, it's like, you know, everybody's got their little nitpicks of, you know, whatever movie just came out or TV show where it's like, oh, the story ended too quick, or, you know, they rushed this or rushed that. I tried to come up with a handful of things where it's like, okay, we need to make sure this goes into the story so that we tie up our loose ends and we touch on all these things that we touched on in earlier issues that we really hadn't done anything with. So I spent like a good part of a year just jotting down notes of things I thought should go in the story. And I filled up a handful of pages in my sketchbook, and I want to say we were going to a convention or something like that. And I knew we were going to be in the car for a couple hours. So I gave Steph all my notes of like, here's everything that, you know, needs to be in the story. Here's where, you know, I think it should start. You know, here's what needs to happen. Here's how we should probably wrap all this stuff up, you know. And then we just talked about it for, you know, a couple hours we were in the car, and, you know, again, took down a ton more notes, and, you know, we got all that stuff kind of hammered out. And, you know, again, it's a lot of back and forth of like, no, I think we should do this. Oh, I think we should do that. Figure out some sort of compromise that kind of touches on both. And we did that. And then we had some time last year where we were getting work done on the house. So we had like about a week or two where my studio was like completely shut down. We had to basically move out for a couple of weeks while the work was being done. So again, it was more time to sit there and kind of hash out the story. So she took all the notes that I took on that car ride, plus everything I had before, turned it into like the like first rough draft of the script. I got to the point where I was like working like crazy, and I was like, okay, I need to read the script so we can kind of review this thing and go through it before we hand it off to let anybody else review it. So don't remember what spurred the idea, but I was like, oh, hey, I could probably get an app to read this thing to me. And that's exactly what I did. I listened to it like 2-3 times while I was working. And it helped. It was like caught up for like where we had stuff that was too repetitive a couple of times. I was like, okay, you know, somebody said that same line 3 or 4 times now. Like, we got to go back in and edit that. So that was like the first pass, went back through, edited it, and then sent it off to a handful of friends. They gave it a couple of passes and gave us notes on, you know, dialogue, things like that, or, you know, something that might punch up, you know, as part of a panel or something. And we did all that, and we both kind of like took a pass at it again to like see, okay, anything else we want to change. So then I started thumbnailing it out. I did a bunch of little tiny, you know, sketches that at least give me an indication of like what's going to happen each page, each panel, that kind of thing. Again, hit another con, and it's like, okay, we got plenty of time. Here's all 40 some pages of, you know, the thumbnails I've drawn that, you know, based on the script. And so Steph goes through it and she kind of marks some stuff. It's like, okay, we need to change this thing, change that thing. And in doing so, realized, okay, we wanted to hit like a 48 page count. Realized, okay, we got to add a page of story, because not only does some stuff need to get stretched out, but as I was working on the thumbnails, it was like, okay, there's things that I think I can put into the story that are the things I like to see in a comic book, where it's like the big splash pages with all the action. And also I love like Easter eggs in movies and TV shows. So it's like, where can I hide some Easter eggs with stuff? How can I like, you know, do callbacks to some of my favorite things, whether it be like a cartoon or, you know, TV show or movie, what have you. And so it's like, I started playing with that kind of stuff and realized, okay, I can stretch out some panels and pages and things. And I started doing spread pages. So I had to make sure my page count was right, so they would line up in the book. And again, all that led to was like, okay, we need to add a page here and a page there. And we hit our mark, and that now I'm going through working on the pages. There is still one page we have to add some stuff for like story-wise and dialogue and such to make everything space out as it should be. So it's like an ongoing process of like just, you know, taking each step of it and rolling through it. Just kind of going back and forth with reviewing stuff. It's like I get a page drawn, hand it to her, she checks it out. I've got a couple of friends that are going to be helping out on this thing as far as like inking goes, things like that. So, you know, I'll try to get input from them and stuff, so that, you know, we try to, you know, be fair about it on like what we're going back and forth on to, you know, get to the end product, and try not to like, you know, get into too heated of a disagreement or anything. It's like, we need to, you know, change this or change that. It's usually a lot of like, okay, yeah, this works for the story, that doesn't work for the story, and get it down to where it's like, and basically just the best version that we think we can do of it.
You mentioned that you're wrapping up the current story arc for Scarlet Huntress. So would that mean that there are other tales or more issues coming in the near future?
Yes. How near in the future? We'll see. But yes, we do lay a little bit of groundwork, you know, drop a few breadcrumbs of story elements that we want to touch on later. So we're honestly really just kind of diving into like the whole world. Everything so far has been kind of that origin story and building the character, building a little bit of the universe. And even though we did the Scarlet's Field Guide to Cryptids and Other Creatures, which is her journal and gives you a little insight into some other stuff she comes across on all of her travels and whatnot, we're going to start to dive into some more of that stuff in the actual comic story. So yeah, there's going to be some stuff coming, and we'll see how quickly we can turn things around to see if we can dive into the next issue and where we can take that and keep plugging away at it.
Before we talk about a few other topics that I'd like to discuss with you, could you tell the listeners where they can get their hands on Scarlet Huntress Reckoning?
So once the book is done and available, we'll have probably a couple places, but the easiest is just hitting on my website, which is seanforney.com. So it's SEANFORNEY.com. There's a link there to our store. We'll eventually probably put it up on Amazon, and it'll also be available on Drive-Thru Comics for those that like to read digital books. Do anticipate trying to have this thing out by the end of 2022. So just keep an eye on all of our social media and updates and all that, and we'll have it out there soon enough.
Okay, let's switch gears, because there's another character that I would like to discuss with you real quick. And okay, that character is a very, very popular character, one that we all know, Pooh. It seems that you have lots of little projects featuring this little cartoon character as Pooh Knight instead of Moon Knight, or I forget his name, but as He-Man, and a variety of other versions of Pooh. So can you tell us a little bit, like, what's the deal with Pooh, shall we say?
So for the last, I want to say 8-9 years, something like that, I've been working with Murat Michaels, who, coincidentally enough, I think it was yesterday, posted it's his 30th anniversary of working in the industry and his first book coming out. And anybody that's not familiar with him, Murat started as the first, like, rookie at Image Comics back when they first formed Image. He was, grew up and was close friends with Rob Liefeld and was also, you know, artist himself and a fan and all this kind of stuff. And so he was like the first guy hired on, did the book called Brigade. So like I said, that hit its 30th anniversary yesterday. So flash forward like 20 some odd years, he and I met at San Diego Comic-Con, and it was due in part to Rob Liefeld was looking for a colorist, and a couple of friends had like tagged me in Facebook posts and things like that. So I went to try to talk to him at San Diego Comic-Con a few years back, and he was away from the table, and I saw Murat sitting there, and I recognized the name, didn't know really know their connection at the time. I just knew they'd worked together and assumed like, well, at least he's his table neighbor, he might know if he's coming back today, that kind of thing. So I, you know, walked over and started up a conversation, and Murat said, you know, he was looking for a colorist as well. I guess the same person that was coloring work for both of them had gone on to do something else or something of that nature. And so Murat took some of my sample and was like, well, hey, we'll talk in like next week or so. And so he did, you know, we kicked off with doing a handful of like things here and there. And over like, I think he and I have been working like 2-3 years, something like that. We've been working together, and he came up with this thing with doing this book called Do You Pooh? It's a parody of Winnie the Pooh and all the characters in the Winnie the Pooh universe. And it's a mixture of Winnie the Pooh and Deadpool's origin. So the issue is basically the origin story of how he becomes like Deadpool, and he goes after revenge on everybody that, you know, is responsible for him becoming Deadpool. So like there's, you know, twisted versions of Christopher Robin and Eeyore and Piglet and all that. Started off, it was just he needed like rush colors on a couple of the pages because he was trying to get it out for a convention. And so I did. I helped out with a handful of pages to get it colored so that he could get it printed. And next thing I know, we start doing covers for it. And then all of a sudden, we were doing a lot of covers for it. So anybody not familiar with it at all, it's basically, it's always the same interior because it's a parody book. We can't do more than one issue, but it's always got a different cover on it. But, you know, it's either an homage to like a classic comic book cover or movie poster, or even we've even been doing album covers lately featuring Pooh as, you know, whatever it is we're homaging, and you name it. I think we've done it over the last like 7-8 years, something like that. And we do something like, I'd say easily at times we do like a dozen of these things a month, because different comic book retailers like to take them to conventions or do live sales on Facebook and whatnot and things like that. And it kind of grew last year. Murat and I did in 2020, we added to it and we did Tigumverse. So it was Tigger with like the Venom suit, and it was like the whole spin on like the Venom story and all this. And then last year, he had me do All Out Pooh, which is Pooh fighting and killing off all these different versions of himself in like 18, 20 pages, whatever it is. So again, this whole thing has grown over the last handful of years. And again, we keep up with it, like sometimes like dozen colors a month, where it's all these different things with, you know, Pooh as like recently did Pirates of the Caribbean. I did the Goonies, the Thundercats. I just finished up one that's coming out for Voltron. So it's like we get asked to do all sorts of crazy stuff with it, and people dig it. Like there's a lot of folks out there that are collectors of variant covers, and you know the homage thing. It's been the big thing in the comic industry for the last couple of years. So we've totally embraced it and gone all in on a lot of the stuff.
What are your thoughts on like the Winnie the Pooh horror flick that they're supposedly doing?
I'm interested to see it. I don't know how good it's gonna be or anything like that. I'll give it a watch if it becomes available on like a streaming service or something. And mm-hmm. you know, from what I understand, the folks that made that knew Winnie the Pooh was going public domain, and they basically already had that thing mostly in the can, ready to go for as soon as it like dropped that he was public domain, so they could get it out there.
Yeah, that, you know what, I did not read that, but that makes sense to me, because it did seem like within literally like what, a day or two, that was popping up all over the internet.
Yes, yes. And funny enough, the one of the folks that, like, I think it was the person that made the like suit, the Winnie the Pooh costume or whatever, they showed up at a convention and got a photo with Marat, and he's already turned it into a cover.
So, that's resourcefulness.
Yes, yes.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Sean for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. Again, they got you covered for anything you need. So, stop on over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is a website. And they're even on Facebook. Just search for @WGComics. All right, let's talk about a couple of things more geared about you, Sean. So, who are your inspirations?
So, I've got a handful, and there's some that are pretty integral to me as far as, like, you know, anything I've ever done or whatever. But I think one of the biggest ones for me was when I started out was definitely Jim Lee. That was like the first artist I came across that I really took notice of the work. And then a couple years later, Joe Madureira and Michael Turner. Both kind of hit me like right at the right time. I was in like junior high, high school when I came across their work. Just kind of fell in love with it, and definitely influential on me on like how I like to approach various things stylistically and whatnot. And then also like outside of those guys are the guys that, you know, I read all their work and, you know, just dove into doing, you know, following what they were doing. But also then, friends that I've worked with and got to know over the last few years that have been super integral in everything I've done. My buddy Josh Metters, he was one of a couple of folks that kept pushing me to dive into doing coloring work. Because of him, I got various different projects that I worked on that led me to another person that I've followed their work and has been inspirational as well as influential in getting some of the other projects I've done, which was Tim Seeley. And then, of course, like I mentioned, Marat. I can kind of tie back a lot of the work that I've done to those three individuals as far as like where I've gone in the industry and stuff. And the other guys were kind of like, they were the guys that kind of like, I followed their work enough to kind of get headed in the right direction and then, you know, kind of took off from there. And then the other guys, you know, they got me more sort of pointed in the right direction and it helped me at different steps along the way to, you know, improve and things of that nature.
One thing that I do marvel at while looking at your website is that you do a lot of different art. I'm assuming that when you sit down to do like a pinup, or you're doing one of your own comics, or you're doing something for a commercial client, I'm sure that you have to have really sharp skills in a variety of different art styles. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yeah, I mean, it used to be like, as far as comic books go, it used to be you could kind of be geared towards like one role. You could be a penciler, you could be an inker, you could be a colorist, a letterer, a writer, editor, so on and so forth. Anymore, because of various different factors, like, you know, especially one of the biggest ones being digital, it's better to be a little bit more versatile and being able to approach the artwork and the job, whatever it may be, with having various different skill sets. Like when I first dove into this whole thing, I wanted to draw stuff. I wanted to be a penciler. I didn't really want to touch ink. I really didn't want to deal with color stuff. And it kind of, both of those things kind of came out of necessity, because some of the first gigs I got were like really small publisher stuff. And it was, you know, if I wanted it to be in print, I had to ink it myself. And then later on, I'd have to color it. The stuff myself, and especially for doing the standard convention stuff and being set up, if I wanted to have prints to sell or things of that nature, meant that I had to do all the stuff myself, or I'd have to hire out somebody to do it. So, you know, I taught myself a lot of stuff. Thankfully, I had kind of taken a little dive into coloring work while I was still in college. I had a couple of classmates that had shown me a few things, and, you know, picked up a couple of books of stuff at the time when I, you know, first started fiddling with Photoshop. And then again, learned more stuff along the way. It was kind of like learn on the job, basically. Again, it kind of comes down to the project, but most projects anymore, it's kind of a, you almost have to be a one man show in a way. But thankfully, there's a lot of folks that I've met and become acquaintances or friends with or whatnot that, you know, if there ever is a need, if I need somebody that can tackle a particular aspect of, you know, whatever the finished piece of art is, that I can kind of call upon and be like, hey, I need help with inks, or I need help with this or that. There are some of those individuals that are available to, you know, help out and help get a project done on time, or, you know, fulfill a certain need or whatever. Yeah, but again, it's a lot of it is, yeah, having to be versatile and be able to, you know, not only draw, but, you know, kind of have the vision ahead of time of like, okay, when this thing is finished, it's going to be, you know, such and such color, and these things are going to happen. Because I've noticed more and more, there's many art directors and stuff that are out there that don't have the ability to visualize some things. So it's like, it's kind of all got to be laid out there at once and be able to go, okay, this is what I'm doing, this is how I'm going to do it, and then actually dive into doing it. So there's a lot of work before work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It makes perfect sense. You gotta be well prepared for what
you're doing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Sean, what's your dream project?
There's a few dream projects that I'd still love to tackle. I'd love to do something in the Spider-Man universe. He's always been one of my favorite characters. Would love to do something with Masters of the Universe or Thundercats. I'm, you know, big fan of those. Those hit at the right age when I was a kid that I still love all that kind of stuff, and would love to dive into that sandbox and play around with something. Ninja Turtles being another one of those. And would love to do something with like Conan, something in that kind of fantasy realm, just to play around with the, you know, the sword and sorcery, the fantasy stuff. Any of that would be fun to dive in and just draw the heck out of it.
All right, got two more questions before we start wrapping things up, and I'll let you plug your social media and all that jazz. But question number one of the final two, Scarlet Huntress is opted to be a movie. Who is going to play Scarlet Huntress?
Oh, man, I should have done some homework on that one. Off the top of my head, like a couple of actresses that would come to mind, and maybe it would be some stuff like down the road, but I cannot think of her name and how to say it, but the actress that played Sabrina on the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina or whatever on Netflix, I think she would be a good choice. And I'm also blanking on her name, Max from Stranger Things.
Would that young lady you're referring to, I think that would be Kiernan Shipka?
Yes, yes.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Her and, like I said, the actress that plays Max on Stranger Things, I think could be a possibility. And let's see.
By the way, that person that plays Max, that would be Sadie Silk, I think.
Okay.
Or Sadie Sink. I don't remember her name. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm totally blanking on names right now. Like I said, I should have done some homework on that one.
It's all right. I dropped this one on you unprepared. Yeah. But those are two, you know what, Sean? Those are two solid picks.
I think they could work. Also after seeing it, I mean, the actress in Prey.
Stellar
job. And I'm not going to get her name right. Her last name is has the word thunder in it, and I cannot think of it. But yeah, I think those would be some top picks. I'd have to do a little bit more thinking on it and like think of anything I've seen recently to see if anybody could kind of fit. But you know, I'm also always I think all of us do it when we get to talking with our friends and whatnot, and especially when my buddy and I do live streams, we always, you know, sit there and think like, oh, who'd be great in, you know, this next Marvel project that's coming out or whatever. And I'm always a big like proponent of like finding unknown actors, actresses, whatever, to like take on the role and like really dive in and like bring that character to life, especially like the actress that has done the Ms. Marvel stuff, Iman Vellani.
Yes.
She's fantastic as a character. You know, she, to my knowledge, hadn't really done anything before that, and she brought the character to life, and she is an like uber nerd. She knows all her stuff and everything. So I'd be totally on board for finding that that unknown actress that could just dive in there, bring the character to life, and you know, start up that way.
All right, last question. I understand you're a big fan of Daredevil.
Yes.
If Daredevil fights Scarlet Huntress, who wins?
Oh, man. I think I got to give the edge to Daredevil. I think he's got a few more tricks up his sleeve that I think would put him on top. Plus the added experience.
Sure, added experience. You know, and I agree with you. I think Daredevil, he's got a little bit of he wouldn't break the rules, but he'd bend them a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, Sean, let's talk about upcoming appearances, if you're going to be at any cons or any comic book stores doing signings or anything like that. Let's talk about some new projects, talk about social media, website, and all that great stuff.
All right, so appearances, the only thing I have on schedule currently is Cartoon Crossroads Columbus in October. I don't remember the dates off the top of my head, but... it's at the main Columbus Library. Like I said, it's in October. It'll be my first time showing up to that one. So I'm curious to see how it all works out. It looks like a fun show. I don't have anything set yet, but I'll just do a wink, wink. I've got something coming out. I'll probably be doing some store appearances, hopefully in September. And then other projects that I have outside of Scarlet Huntress Reckoning getting finished up. There'll definitely be some more Pooh stuff coming out here very soon. I've got some covers coming out for some various books at Ethereal Comics. And I believe I've got some Lady Death stuff coming with Coffin Comics. And I've got a handful of some like small press books that I've done some covers for that'll be on the horizon here very soon. And then to keep up with all that stuff and figure out where I'm going to be and what's coming out, all my social media, Facebook, Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, whatnot, are all at Sean Forney Art. And YouTube, I have a page set up, but I don't have the fancy URL. So if you search Sean Forney Art, you'll find the YouTube page. And as I mentioned earlier, the website is SeanForney.com. And that'll get you a link to our store. And that'll also give you some information on the live streams that I do with my buddy Rodney Fike, Thursdays and Fridays, 8 p.m. Eastern. We live stream, talk nerdy, talk food, draw pretty pictures. And then I also live stream Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Eastern for about a half hour. And those streams are on the Facebook page, the Twitch, and YouTube.
There you go. Well, Sean, thanks, man, for coming back on and talking to me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, John.
No problem. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I will be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Sean Forney, talking about his various projects, including Scarlet Huntress Reckoning. And, you know, as we ran down his website and social media and all that stuff, keep an eye out for when this book comes available. I definitely think you need to check it out and check out all the other issues as well. So again, you get a chance, pick up Scarlet Huntress. I think you will really, really enjoy it. And thanks again, Sean, for taking some time out of your busy schedule to sit down and chat with me. Now, maybe you want to get in touch with me. You want to tell me your opinion about this episode or any episode for that matter? Well, you can get in contact with me a variety of different ways. First, you can shoot me an email. johnorlando@pvdcast.com is my email address. Or you can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @pvdmvp. And you can even leave me a message over on the Instagram and Facebook feeds. Just look for @pvdcast. And maybe you want to let some folks know where they can hear the PVD cast. Well, there's a bunch of different avenues for that. First, PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, is probably the easiest way to go and get every single episode as it drops. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting outlets. All you have to do is go into the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should be able to find it. And if you even need an easier way to check out an episode, well, I got a very simple way. Simply go to the Facebook page. Once again, that's at PVDcast. Every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I play the week's episode. And so you can sit back, chill, enjoy that broadcast on Facebook. And heck, I'm even monitoring the broadcast. So if you have questions or comments, you can leave them for me and I'll respond. So it's a way to be kind of a little bit more interactive. So there you go. All the different ways that you can listen to the PVDcast. But if you listen to an episode of the PVDcast, I need you to rate and review. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. And, you know, all these different places, whether you're talking about Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or iHeartRadio app or whatever app outlet you're talking about, they all track data. And that algorithm needs to move up to help me out. So again, please rate, review. You don't have to do anything super long in your review. You can just write a couple of words. You can give me as many stars as you think I deserve. I really would appreciate it. And also, don't forget that you want to subscribe as well so you never miss an episode of this great podcast. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you once again for checking out the episode. And I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2022.